T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Kingdom OX.
Listen anytime, anywhere.
Get the radio.com app today.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy. You're winning too much.
I'm a man. I am an anchor man. I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and bronze. That's what kind of man I am.
Government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem.
I got into broadcasting because I like to give. Sometimes I found myself hurting from giving too much.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Mark Reardon, ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and give a warm welcome to this guy.
On KMOX.
Hang on a minute here. Hang on a minute. Dave, I think we need different music here. I don't like this one for today. And I think everyone will understand why.
That don't kill me. Can only make me stronger. I need you to hurry up now.
Kanye West. I think it's safe to say he's one of the more modest entertainers on the planet. At the White House for lunch today. You heard the cut there at the beginning of the hour. I mean, you really can't buy entertainment like that. You know, this is a way, there are all kinds of ways I think you could offset the federal deficit and debt. And one way would be to set up more meetings like this and do them pay-per-view. Because that actually might be pretty, oh, that was an edit, wasn't it? Yeah, we gotta be careful here. We get fined by the FCC. He said a bunch of things here. He was wearing the red Make America Great Again hat.
You know, they tried to scare me to not wear this hat, my own friends, but this hat, It gives me power.
Yeah, Kanye is not stepping down.
You know, people expect that if you're black, you have to be Democrat. I have I've had conversations that basically said that welfare is the reason why a lot of black people end up being Democrat.
Well, I think that's probably true, and that's one reason. Look, I like the way, I don't know if he's the best messenger here, right? I would say I like the way that he's challenging some of the preconceived notions, because let's look at poverty and education and crime in urban America. Let's take, where's crime, like bad crime? Give me a city that's got a bad crime problem. Like a lot of people get murdered. Where would that? Oh, wait a second. That's right. It's here. But think about that. There's no Republican conservative solutions in the city of St. Louis, that's for sure. And everything they've done has not worked. Of course, they'll blame somebody for that, even though you kind of have to, you know, you don't have George Bush to complain about anymore, or, you know, Ronald Reagan. So I'm not exactly sure where you would. You had Barack Obama as president for 8 years. So I guess it's Donald Trump's fault, right? What else did he say here? Well, he talked about his mental condition.
I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I was connected with a neuropsychologist that works with the athletes in the NBA and the NFL. And he looked at my brain. It's equal on 3 parts. I'm going to go ahead, drop some bombs for you. 98 percentile IQ test.
98 percentile. I'm going to challenge that one a little bit. I don't know. What do you think?
You are fake news.
I think that's what the president said. And then finally, he talked about SNL, Saturday Night Live.
What I need Saturday Night Live to improve on, or what I need the liberals to improve on, is if he don't look good, we don't look good. This is our president. He has to be the freshest, the flyest.
So there you go. Kanye West at the White House today. We'll cover that a little bit more later. A lot to get to, including CBS News foreign affairs analyst Pamela Falk on this missing Saudi journalist. I haven't given a lot of attention to that, but it is an amazing story, and we'll get to it here in a moment. I got to start, though, down in Florida with the hurricane and the aftermath, and I think some of these images are just stunning. We are joined this afternoon by CBS News correspondent Rob Milford, who's in Panama City. Rob, how are you?
Mark, it's been a tough morning going into Panama City and seeing some of that. Wow. I mean, it's really bad.
You know, this whole thing bubbled up so quickly. The last hurricane, Florence, there was a buildup and lots of, you know, it seemed like a week of warnings. But this one happened in a different manner, the way it bubbled up in the ocean with the warm water and the cool rain. So here's a true story. Last night, I'm getting ready to go to bed. I was kind of glued to the coverage because some of the first pictures were coming into the devastation. I fell asleep, woke up at 2 o'clock, started seeing some more images, couldn't get back to sleep because I was watching all the coverage.
That's right. The coverage, I think, of Florence is fresh in everyone's mind. They know what can happen with a hurricane. When the governor started calling on people to leave that part of the coast, Panama City, 30, 40 miles either direction, evacuate, leave now. People paid attention. That's why the loss of life, tragic for that one family, but it was still a very low cost in lives lost compared to other hurricanes where you'll lose dozens or even hundreds of people. For the third most powerful storm ever to hit the United States, ever, and only one life lost when the storm came on shore.
That really is amazing. So what did you, first of all, let's talk about Mexico Beach, which somebody said, a colleague said, I didn't even know there was a Mexico Beach, and I said, well, there isn't. I mean, it looks like a bomb exploded.
It looks like the Sixth Fleet attacked it with gunfire and carrier-based aviation. It's real bad. It's a big chainsaw went through there, and then they washed a lot of it out into the ocean as well. It was a quaint little fishing village, emphasis on the word was. It absolutely is where landfall was made by Michael, and it will never, ever be the same.
So what about Panama City? And then one of the other follow-up questions would be, because tornadoes sort of become, this is always interesting to folks, I think, become a part of hurricanes, could some of the damage be from those tornadoes? I don't know that that really matters at this point.
Well, let's take the Joplin tornado from a few years back, shall we? That is God's finger just dragging across the countryside. That's really all you can say it is. It wasn't quite that bad, but almost. And a tornado will go by a certain point. It will go by in 20, 30 seconds, tops. This hurricane, the eye wall, is only traveling at 14 miles an hour. And you can catch it the wrong way, and you could have that eye wall over you for 10, 15, 20 minutes. And that's not just a simple little track. It's this giant wall of wind that's going from your right to your left, left to right, and it will mess up everything in its path. And believe me, everything man-made was gone.
Do you think that at this point, because a lot of this, when it happened yesterday, then night falls, so it's dark and the sun comes up, you see some of the damage, the devastation. Are there areas, do you sense, that still we haven't seen some of the worst of it or not?
No, it's all been seen. In driving into Panama City this morning, I was overflown by Coast Guard helicopters, at least three, a Coast Guard search and rescue aircraft, a couple of Army Black Hawk helicopters, helicopter. They were transporting people in and probably doing FEMA work. The Corps of Engineers had a helicopter in there surveying what they needed to do, and the Air Force has been flying into what's left of Tyndall Air Force Base, which took a direct hit. It's right between Panama City and Mexico Beach, and it's the only thing out there, and I'm not sure that there's going to be a Tyndall Air Force Base when all is said and done.
How do you begin to recover? What's the first priority for recovery?
You open up the streets. And that's why everybody with a chainsaw and a pickup truck that's in business within 200 miles is driven in to start cutting trees. Then you start restoring the power lines, whether you have to put a whole new pole in the ground or just restring cable. And now people have electricity. Now they have refrigeration. Now they have light. Now they can work later. For people who don't have roofs, what they're doing is grabbing some big 30 by 30 blue tarps and hammer them down on the roof to keep the water out, any more water out. And then you start looking for help. Do we have gasoline for the generator and the chainsaw? Do we have ice for the cooler so we don't lose everything that was in the freezer? One of my priorities, I live just down the road in Pensacola. Do I have enough gas for my barbecue grill? I know what's in my freezer. If I lose power, I'm going to start throwing stuff on the grill as it thaws out, and that's how you eat. And still maintain your food quality as well.
CBS News correspondent Rob Milford, stay safe down there. Obviously, we'll continue to cover the aftermath of this hurricane, and we'll talk soon. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
Good being with you.
First with breaking news, KMOX, St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather.
It really is a story I've wanted to cover this week, but we had a shortened week, or I had a shortened week. It was not here on Tuesday, but the case of the missing Saudi journalist is more than a little intriguing, and some of the details coming out are fascinating. CBS News foreign affairs correspondent Pamela Falk with me this afternoon. Pamela, how are you?
Very well, Mark. Let me give you a little flavor, because we've heard the bottom line. You know, did Saudi Arabia do it? What is Turkey saying? But let me give you a little flavor. This is a guy, Jamal Khashoggi. He was born in Saudi Arabia. He went to the University of Indiana. He came to the United States for many years. Then he went back to Saudi Arabia, and he became a spokesperson and worked with the royal family, very in touch with the previous generation of kings and princes, and was very much in that group. Then when the new crown prince came in, he saw problems. He started to point problems out. And at this point, and he had always been a journalist before he went into working with the royal family. And so he started writing columns for the Washington Post. He moved to Virginia in the United States. He's a resident with a visa and applying for a green card for permanent residency. Went back and forth a lot and met a woman. He had previously been married, met a woman in Turkey who he wanted to marry, and was starting to write very critical things about Mohammed bin Salman, the new young prince, crown prince in Saudi Arabia. That led him to believe, just on his own, since there are at least 15 journalists jailed in the last 2 years, that he was probably in trouble in Saudi Arabia, and he moved permanently to Turkey. And went on with his life and started to make plans to get married, and went to the consulate of Saudi Arabia to first to get the divorce papers. They said, you have to come back for the final papers so that you can get married. And this is where things start to get crazy, because what appears to have happened is that the Saudis laid a plot now to detain him, and we don't know exactly what happened next. But on October 2nd, we have a picture of him walking into the consulate of Saudi Arabia.
Right.
It's a U.S. resident journalist and who writes regularly for the Washington Post. And he walked in, and he didn't walk out.
Now, just a quick question there. Why did he go there originally? He was looking for some paperwork for his wedding. Is that true?
Decree that allows him to get remarried.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. So he walks in. I've seen the video. I think a lot of people have seen the video. He does not walk out. But
right
now, this investigation.
And his fiancée, who wrote an op-ed last week, is standing outside.
Yeah, right.
With his cell phone.
She's pacing back and forth,
right,
wondering what happened. So that's the last time she saw or heard from him.
Right.
Why didn't he have his cell phone on him?
Because you can't bring them into consulates. I mean,
yeah,
I have that all the time.
Yeah, that
here
makes
at the
sense.
UN, you can't, you know, you have to put your cell phone in a little lock box.
But it seems like we have evidence here, or intercepts, of officials sort of talking about a plan to bring him back to Saudi Arabia. And I saw some reporting also about the tracking of some flights from Istanbul and back to Saudi Arabia and all these things, where it looks like he was certainly at one point perhaps put on one of those airplanes.
Right. So now here's what we can fill in after the fact. He doesn't come out. The fiance is desperate. They had a dinner plan to celebrate the marriage, upcoming marriage, and he just never leaves. Now we have found out that, number one, the U.S. intelligence has intercepted communication that said the Saudi government was intending to detain him, to lure him back to Saudi Arabia under false pretenses and detain him there. And that's what they've usually done with journalists they don't agree with, and they end up in jail, or worse. But that's what we know. Then number two, at the same time that he walked into the consulate, 15 Saudi officials, some intelligence, some very strange titles, forensics, in other words, a death certificate guy, it's very strange.
Yeah, they're all kind of seen going in there, right? They're all seen kind of going into the embassy.
15 of them,
yeah.
And now we're seeing actual pictures of them going into the embassy at the same time, leaving in about an hour out of the embassy, and flying by private jet that arrived that morning out of Ataturk Airport going back from Turkey to Saudi Arabia in these two private jets. And so the only thing, and now the final piece is just the Turkish government has said, now they're not inside the consulate, but they say they have absolute concrete evidence, was their word, that he was not only killed, tortured and killed, but then dismembered, and they brought and they took all of it out of the consulate back to Saudi Arabia, the body parts.
Yeah, well, that sounds, I guess, like a feasible theory because of the evidence that we have. But how can they be so certain of that?
Well, we don't know that, but yeah. We know they are showing us pictures of these guys going in, and we know that they have cameras and show us the pictures of the jets. And what I'd really like to see is what kind of luggage they had, but and that might tell you. Because the other option, since we don't have the whole picture of every little minute for them, and we don't have exit pictures at this point, is what happened that might have done what other governments have done. In the past, notably quite a few years ago, the Israelis did and kidnapped him, sedated him, kidnapped him, kept him alive, put him in some kind of a trunk, bring him to the plane in their vans, and then get him back alive in Saudi Arabia where they're questioning him, torturing him, who knows what. But he hasn't been heard from. So that's still a possibility. We don't have proof of death or proof of life, but we do know that since October 2nd, when he told his fiancée, if anything happens to me, call people if I don't come out. So he knew he was walking into some territory, but he didn't think, no one would have thought this unabashed action of whatever kind, either detaining him and taking and kidnapping him or killing him.
It's just amazing. Pamela, hang on, because I got to do this. We do a contest every day at this time.
Now, your chance to win with the $1,000 Cash Harvest Giveaway on KMOX.
All right, here we go. This hour's keyword in the $1,000 Fall Cash Harvest Giveaway is taco. Test taco to 72881 by the end of the hour. Message and data rates may apply. Don't text and drive. For rules, visit KMOX.com. One randomly selected nationwide entrant will win $1,000 in this contest. Brought to you by WeFixMoney.com. That's WeFixMoney.com. I'm going to run short on time here, but let me ask this question. The president's commented on this, of course, because it almost seems like one of those deals where you might not even find out the real story here. But what potentially could be the repercussions for Saudi Arabia from the United States? I mean, this becomes at some point a diplomatic exercise as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Now, here's the sticky part. There's been a history with Saudi Arabia and the United States as recently, in some ways, as 1993. Saudi Arabia went to court, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, where they tortured an American in Saudi Arabia who finally escaped and brought them to court, and they claimed sovereign immunity because there's a diplomatic immunity for what they do to anybody because they're a government. Now, since that time, the Magnitsky Act passed, mainly aimed at Russia. After the long story of Magnitsky getting killed as an aide to American who was an investor in Russia, and it says that the United States can impose sanctions, assets freeze, travel ban on even government officials. So it changes the law that says diplomats are immune. And so that's what Congress is now doing. A bipartisan group of Congress of senators last night sent a letter to President Trump saying they want a full investigation because you have to be able to, even if it's circumstantial, say what it is. And it's led by Senator Bob Corker, Lindsey Graham, Robert Menendez, Patrick Leahy, and dozens others that say they want sanctions against the crown prince himself if they can definitively say
sure.
Something happened.
Right.
Now, President Trump has since then said, well, there are a lot of things we can do. Let's not jump to that conclusion that we have to impose sanctions because it means American jobs. I mean, there's billions of dollars of trade, U.S. arms sales to Saudi Arabia and purchase of oil to say, you know, to name the top two.
Yeah, tricky situation. Pamela Falk, amazingly interesting information. CBS Foreign Affairs correspondent. Thank you so much for all the details because I think they're important and I wanted to make sure that everyone was caught up, including myself.
Yes, no, absolutely. This is, I mean, it's not a John le Carré novel. It's more like an Agatha Christie murder. I mean, what happened? And it's captivating everyone, especially since the U.S. and Saudi Arabia have become so close.
Pamela, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Mark. Good talking.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, I had my friend Nick Searcy on a couple of weeks ago to talk about this movie, Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. He played Marshal Art Mullen on Justified, and he's a great conservative. If you don't follow Nick on Twitter, you should, because he's very prolific, and he's not afraid to share his opinions, which are pretty much opposite of 98%. I'll say 98. Maybe it's 99.9. No, actually, I think, and Nick and I would agree on this, there's more people in Hollywood who are conservative than you might think. They just have to keep their mouths shut. So this is the story of Kermit Gosnell from the early stages of the police investigation into his abortion facility. And it's just disgusting when you think about it. It's an important movie, and it opens in St. Louis tomorrow. Here is a clip. If we had like one of the actors on, like Dean Cain or something, I'd say, hey, tell me about this clip. And then they'd say, well, I don't know, I haven't seen it yet. Isn't that what they do on TV all the time?
Healthy woman goes into a clinic, comes out dead, and there's no police report?
You'll be the prosecutor who went after reproductive rights, and you'll be a racist to boot.
You've got a lot of folk who'd like to see abortion outlawed. And this is not going to be the case that gives them an excuse.
Prosecution has offered you a plea bargain, Dr. Gosnell.
And I would have to admit I was guilty. I'm not guilty.
Well, it opens again tomorrow, and Phelan McAleer, who's been on the show before, and you're going to remember him, I think. He's the co-producer of this new movie, Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. Phelan, thanks for coming back on. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Now, my audience knows you because we've had you on a couple of times to talk about the play that you put on that became somewhat controversial because people did not want to hear the facts about Ferguson.
That's correct. Yeah, I did a verbatim play on Ferguson, only using the grand jury testimony. And you know what? People don't like the truth.
No.
9 of the actors walked out during rehearsals. That's how much the Hollywood left don't like the truth. They like their fairy tales, but they don't like the truth.
You know, I think even here in St. Louis, film, if you'd go around and you would ask some questions about that case, people would start reciting things that are absolutely not true. And I always encourage folks, and you know this better than anybody, read the grand jury, read the FBI report on what happened, and all this nonsense about hands up, don't shoot will be taken away. But you're right, people don't want to hear the truth. And maybe this movie is another example of that Gosnell, would you think?
Yeah, the media has a lot to blame for this. So the media wouldn't cover this story at the time. This is America's biggest serial killer. You know, it's a great story from a journalistic point of view. I happened to wander into the court by accident in Philadelphia. I heard the most amazing evidence in the world. I saw America's biggest serial killer sitting feet from me. But behind me was the most shocking thing of all, that row after row after row of empty press benches. I mean, the prosecution, they booked the biggest court in Philadelphia, thinking they were going to be overwhelmed with interest. Boy, were they wrong.
Yeah, so, you know, we just went through this embarrassing exercise with Brett Kavanaugh and what the Democrats pulled. So I only bring that up because they're seemingly, and that was about Roe v. Wade. I mean, let's be honest, that's a big portion. But there is this unwillingness to give a different perspective on abortion, and there always has been in the media.
Yeah. I think it's the last secular sacrament, you know. It's a protected space. And that's how Gosnell, by the way, was allowed to keep killing and keep killing and keep killing, was, you know, he was an abortion doctor. And that was, for many, that's that women's lives were sacrificed, that babies' lives were sacrificed. I mean, the people he killed, people he was convicted for killing, African American people, a Bhutanese refugee, someone who'd spent 20 years in a refugee camp. She arrived in Philadelphia, a sanctuary city, and within 4 months she was dead, and there wasn't even a police notification of her death. There was no Department of Health investigation. There was no sanctuary city. There's no sanctuary in this sanctuary city for this woman because she happened to be killed in an abortion clinic, which ranks above refugees in the liberal league table.
Now, Phelim, I think it's important here, and some of this is hard to hear, and this topic subject matter is difficult, but I want you to give a couple of the details of what Kermit Gosnell did with these. And these were not, little petri dish cells that people like to play babies off as, right? These were infants that could have very well been human beings, and he murdered them.
Yeah, I mean, he was murdered. He was convicted of killing three babies, but also several women. And one thing I do want to tell your listeners, this is the movie Hollywood doesn't want you to see and the mainstream media doesn't want you to see, but you shouldn't be worried about what you're going to go and see. It's PG-13. We deliberately crafted the movie so to make it the most palatable movie for the widest audience. So it's not a horror show. There's no gore. Please go and see it. It's something that you need to see. It's something we've had people bring teenage children to pre-screenings, children as young as 11 and 12, and they were so happy. You know, it's a courtroom drama. It's about the drama of trying to convict a man in a country that's very, very on the fence about abortion and doesn't know anything about abortion. So it's that drama. It's that political drama. There's no gore. There's no horror. It's palatable.
Now, did you interview him in prison?
Yes. And myself and my wife, Anne McElhinney, went along to interview him in prison. What a deeply creepy, deeply charismatic, deeply strange man. He sat down in front of us, only he didn't sit down in front of us. He sat down in front of my wife, spent most of the interview putting his hand on my wife's leg.
Really?
Yes. And then apologizing and then putting his hand back. But so we were there for several hours, and this is the kind of him. He was talking about the music he liked, a French crooner, and he couldn't remember the song. And then he started singing a French love song to my wife. He believes he's innocent. He will be vindicated. He seems to be very relaxed, very happy. His biggest problem at the moment is the poetry class is oversubscribed.
Oh, what a shame! Can we do a campaign, a letter writing campaign?
Well, and then he told me he's reading the Quran in two different translations.
He's out there. There's no doubt. Now, did you write this screenplay?
Andrew Clavin, the crime writer, wrote it, and then we helped finish it up. I mean, it's a crime story, and that was we didn't want to make it a pro-life story, even though it has a strong pro-life, feel to it, and you can't come out of it thinking anything less. But we wanted to make it a crime story because we know that there's a huge market in America for crime stories, for true crime, and that's what this is. And I think treating it as a crime story and repeating what people said under oath. You see, when you're under oath, you can't give talking points, you can't lie, you can't make stuff up. You have to tell the truth. And that tells us more about abortion than any debate or anything like that.
Phelim McAleer is the co-producer and screenwriter of the new co-screenwriter of the new movie Gosnell: The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. Opens in St. Louis tomorrow. Did you know that Nick Searcy was your guy from the beginning? Nick's awesome. I've known him now many years. He's been on the show many times. He came on to talk about this movie a couple of weeks ago, but he had to be like the only guy that could tell this story, right?
No. It was very much like Dick Cheney and the vice presidentship. We appointed Nick as chairman of finding us a director, and he recommended a couple of people, and we didn't like them. And then, just like Dick Cheney did to George Bush, he recommended himself as vice president, and we accepted his recommendation.
I think that's a good recommendation for Nick of himself, and I'll apologize because you guys had sent me the movie and I've had some issues at home with my wife. She spent 8 hours in the ER yesterday, so I didn't get a chance to watch it yet. But let me pass this along to our audience here. It's going to be at Marcus Mid Rivers, Marcus Arnold, AMC West Olive, and Marcus Ronnie's starting tomorrow. It may even start tonight, Phelim. Usually you get the the Thursday night rollout. So this movie is playing. It's important that people support it and see it, because then it may hang on for a second week, right?
Yeah.
Or beyond.
Yeah. That's it. No, yeah, I mean, we need this. Hollywood wants us to fail. The mainstream media wants us to fail. It's very, very, very important that the opening weekend has a big bang. I mean, conservatives tend to go to movies later. Oh, well, I'll wait for the second or third week. Don't do that. If you wait for the second or third week, Hollywood will have shut this movie down.
Yeah, well, and that's just the way it works, unfortunately. But so this is a big weekend. I want you to talk a little bit about Viola Brown, the character here, because you guys, I think, were having a little bit of trouble finding the right actress. And then Tessa Whatley has an interesting background story here, doesn't she?
Yeah. So there's a story it's an amazing story in the grand jury where a woman was giving evidence about the treatment she received with Gosnell, and she in the middle of it, she wanted to reverse it, and he refused, and it was about how she was treated and all that, and she gave her evidence, and she got up to leave, and the grand jury says, no, stop, we need to find out what happened, like, did you get it reversed? She goes, oh, yes, she said, my baby started kindergarten today, and the grand jury stood up and applauded. It's the first time in the history of Pennsylvania that they stood up and clapped a witness. Like, it's unheard of. So it's an amazing story. So we put that into the film in a certain way. And we hired this, Nick, of course, being Nick, found a wonderful actress in an IHOP, believe it of all places.
Wow.
And yeah, and she had this role, and she came on and did the role. She was great. And then she was reading the script, and she called my wife over, and she goes, I can't believe the script. This is my story. She herself went for an abortion. And the nurse who was giving her the abortion said, why don't you take the stethoscope and listen to your baby's heartbeat, and I'll come back. And when she came back, the Tessa was getting dressed and leaving. And said, we interviewed her about it. She said, I can't believe this is my story. I want to tell everyone, don't have an abortion. You're killing whole generations of people. She goes to the bed every day and looks at her baby and finds it really hard to believe she could have killed him. You can see her testimony online, Tessa Whatley. It's an amazing, amazing story.
Well, Phelim, thanks for coming on. And, you know, I'm a big supporter of Nick's, and I've been waiting for this movie, because I remember when he announced it on Twitter that he was directing this a few years ago, and I think a lot of us have been waiting for it. It's a story that does deserve to be told. Again, another reminder, as Phelim explained at the beginning of the interview, this is not something that is inappropriate for older children, because it's PG-13. So just keep that in mind. That was something that you guys tried to do. So, Phelim, good luck. We'll get some people out to the theaters this weekend.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's Mark Reardon now. Total Information PM starts at 4 with news, weather, traffic, and information you need on KMOX.
All right, a couple things for tomorrow. We have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow afternoon. We'll be joined by State Senator Bill Eigel and Alderman Jack Coder. Jane Duker also on the panel. Plenty of stuff to talk about tomorrow. In the next hour, I can't believe this. I invited Tim Mizell to come in here because he made an announcement last week that he was coming back to Fox 2's morning program starting on October 22nd, and I can't believe. Take a guess at when he left. 4 years ago already, 2018, which is kind of hard to believe, and he's coming in here in just a few minutes to spend some time with us after the top of the hour. Let me play this. I think this is appropriate here. Michael Avenatti. Proud St. Louisan, Parkway Central has proposed a charity mixed martial arts fight with Donald Trump Jr. Dylan Byers tweeted this out. I'm having lunch with Michael Avenatti at the Vanity Fair Summit, and he's proposing a 3-round mixed martial arts fight with Donald Trump Jr. for charity. No joke. So we have not, I don't think anyone's heard from Donald Trump Jr. yet, but of course they've clashed on Twitter with Donald Trump Jr. tweeting, who else is excited about Avenatti Wiener? That would be Anthony Wiener. 2020, it's going to be Carlos Dangerous, which I think is a pretty funny tweet. Is he still in prison? Is Wiener still in prison? He was in September of 2017, sent to prison. I think he might be out by 2020, though. He might be out now. I don't know. I just thought that whole thing was ridiculous. And then there's this story here. This is mind-blowing. And be careful if you're driving, ladies and gentlemen. Vanity Fair has done a story There's been, I mean, I'm blown away by the quality of journalism. And we had an example of it yesterday with The Hollywood Reporter and Spin magazine going back and quoting the third grade teacher of Stephen Miller, who's on the White House team. I think people know Stephen Miller. He's a flamethrower. But they went to his third grade teacher, who was quoted as saying that he ate glue, which was amazing. That's the state of journalism. But listen to this. Vanity Fair has found that putting NFL cheerleaders in skimpy outfits on the sidelines of NFL games was part of a league strategy to sell sex on the sidelines. Now, that's a little shocking, isn't it? I thought it was all about just cheering for the right team.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.